America's liberty is under assault, and women are rising to the defense. It's time for Ladies Can We Talk on 660 AM The Answer. Common sense talk with women and men about politics and standing up for America. With your host, nationally acclaimed speaker and author, Debbie Georgiatos. Ladies Can We Talk starts now.
Good morning and welcome to Ladies Can We Talk. Thank you so very much for tuning in this morning. You know, the intro to my show talks about the idea that America's liberty is under assault. And I actually have people ask me that sometimes. What are you talking about? Why do you say that? And I'm going to talk about pretty much that idea today, but actually even more specific than that, I'm going to talk about one idea that is, it is like a litmus test if you talk with people about it, whether or not they are kind of American loving liberty lovers, or are they more cynical or critical or at least skeptical about America? It's a litmus test for determining whether someone's kind of a left-wing political thinker in America or a right-wing political thinker. And that expression, that term, I want to talk about the whole time today is American exceptionalism. I talk about it in my book, Ladies Can We Talk? In fact, the full name of my book is Ladies Can We Talk? America Needs Our Vote. And I urge women and everyone in every talk I do around the country to really dig in and think about more deeply than we ever have before, what really is it that makes America so great? Why is it that America is a country in every corner of this world, repressed people, if they could get away, if they could go somewhere else, they want to come to America? It is because of our exceptionalism, but I think sometimes we miss out and we're not really focused on why America is so exceptional. And, you know, I read something I just was so struck by, and I'll share it with you. It was written by Charles Murray, and he's obviously a very famous thinker. He wrote this in March of 2009. So it was just after President Obama had taken office for the first time. And he wrote this in the Journal of the American Enterprise and Institute. And it is his article is called The European Syndrome and the Challenge to American Exceptionalism. I just thought it was one of the most insightful things I had read, and I encourage you to read that. But one of the basic points he makes is he talks about, you know, right now, for the first time in America, we have one of the two major parties, and we have the elected president of the United States is someone who's very different in terms of how he and that party view kind of European social democracy, socialist kind of ideas. This is the first president we've had in our country who's really very warm, fuzzy, and friendly toward socialist ideas, toward the way Europe functions, and they use the expression in Europe, kind of social democrats. Actually, it sounds kind of friendly. It sounds like they're just friendly, chatty people, really social, but that's not at all what it means. But anyway, I want to talk about what he talks about there is America's really looking at a fork in the road. Are we going to embrace the kind of ideas that Europe embraces, or are we going to stay on the path of what America was? Well, right around that time, you probably remember, President Obama was asked at a press conference, and I didn't find out the exact date, but he was asked at a press conference, essentially, you know, what about this American exceptionalism stuff? And he made the comment that, sure, I think America is exceptional, and I'm sure the Brits think that Britain's exceptional. I think the Greeks think that Greece is exceptional. And so it really was a kind of cynical remark about America or about the idea of American exceptionalism. But he later, to be fair to President Obama, has said in other times, in fact, recently he spoke about Syria. And he did say about Syria that, of course, you know, American exceptionalism was there to be helpful to Syria as it's undergoing its major problems that Syria has. And he said it was because of America's policies. President Obama said it's America's policies that make America exceptional. And I would like to disagree with that. Policies that we have practiced in the past, that we live by, they are outcomes of what really is the source or the core of American exceptionalism. So I want to just talk about what American exceptionalism is, how can we measure or examine it, what is the source of it, and how it's under threat today, and how each of us can defend it. And I guess I also want to just run through what American exceptionalism is not. because many, especially left-wing thinkers in America, they tend to agree with Vladimir Putin, who wrote, and you probably all saw that, Vladimir Putin wrote a, I think it was Wall Street Journal or Washington Post, and New York Times op-ed in 2013, where he wrote about, he got after President Obama and said, America is not exceptional. This is Vladimir Putin. Talked about the idea of American exceptionalism as a notion that's extremely dangerous. And he was just really very harsh in criticizing Obama for even having said that. And so Vladimir Putin, he's also joined by Bill Maher, you know, the left-wing intellect. Not really. He's a talk show guy at night. He's very, very cynical and kind of anti-American liberty type guy. And he, Bill Maher, said in 2012, we need to get over the idea of American exceptionalism. So I want to, because the left is so harsh about it and misstates, and I think intentionally mischaracterizes the idea of American exceptionalism, I'm going to run through a list of what it is not. American exceptionalism is not the idea that race or ethnicity of our founders or colonists was what was great. It is not about the geography of America, not about the dirt our planet, or we are located on the planet. It's not because God likes us better. It's not because we've never made mistakes as a country. It's not because we're perfect and have no problems. American exceptionalism is not true because we think we're better than everybody else. And we're not saying we have the right to tell other countries or people how to live. And it doesn't mean that other nations or peoples also are not good and have not done great things. But what it is, and we'll talk about much more than this today, but it's the idea, it's a combination actually of many ideas and values that kind of undergirded our country's formation and our whole societal cultural fabric, making our country unique in all of world history. The U.S. has for 100 years and more been the beacon of opportunity and hope, the most likely and successful protector of the world's oppressed masses. It's the place everyone who wants to, who can, comes to find hope, new life, opportunity, freedom, liberty, a way out of repression. And, you know, I can just run through many, many achievements and or great things about America. And we could do that the whole hour, but I don't want to spend the whole hour just touting that. But what I'm talking about here, really, these are outcomes of the fact of America's exceptionalness, if that's a word. These are outcomes of American being exceptional. But there was a Canadian, he actually was a Canadian radio commentator named Gordon Sinclair, who in 1973 just went on a rant one day. He was a Canadian guy talking about America's greatness. And in this rant, which became a very, very viral email all over the internet, and it goes on today, people still send it around. And he basically talked about the world looks at Canada, the world looks at America, and they see all this goodness and all this greatness and all the things Americans have done to help other people, to protect other nations. He talks about, he and others have talked about stopping the Nazis in Germany, you know, freeing Western Europe from the Nazi siege. Contrast what happened afterwards with after the Nazis were defeated in Germany, talks about the Marshall Plan. We gave $17 billion, which is in today's dollars, $160 billion in economic support to help rebuild Europe. We didn't act like Vladimir Putin is doing today in the Ukraine and in Crimea, where he is being an expansionist, crushing free people. That is the Vladimir Putin Russian communist way, completely different than the American way. But in America's history, we had the Marshall Plan, the Truman Doctrine, where we worked very hard to protect free people from the aggressiveness of communist Russia. Even though Russia was our ally in World War II, they soon afterward became the next aggressor we had to deal with, and they were the communist aggressor of the world. United States, as just one example, in terms of our aid we give to people in the world, the United States government, agree with it or not, gives to the world, just for example, in 1 year, 2012, a total of $48.4 billion in economic and military aid. And that was $17.2 billion in military, $31.2 billion economic aid to countries around the world. And one other thing to tell you about America's generosity, all that money comes from America, comes from taxpayers. It goes out to people around the world, but private citizens in America, private organizations, churches, colleges, corporations. Also, in just that 1 year, 2012, total U.S. private assistance to countries around the world, $71.2 billion. And as we get up toward the break, I'm going to mention this one last thing. All of that aid that we give in America comes from taxpayers who elect the government officials who make those decisions. It comes from private citizens. And you may ask, you say, well, of course, America is more generous. We have more money. But the question during the break to ponder is why? Why does America have all that wealth? It ties back to American exceptionalism. It ties back to the greatness of our country that gave us the ability to have that wealth to share. Come back after the break.
We return to Ladies Can We Talk with host Debbie Georgiatos on 660 AM The Answer.
Welcome back to Ladies Can We Talk. This is your host, Debbie Georgiatos. Again, thank you for tuning in. I always want to tell you during these shows that you're welcome to email me with questions after the show, or I do a lot of speaking around the country to women's groups, college classes, high school classes, just on the basic idea of loving, recognizing the goodness and greatness of America, recognizing its importance to all the world, and encouraging Americans not just to understand the goodness of America, but to learn to speak up more about it. So my email address is ladiescanwetalk@gmail.com. Ladiescanwetalk@gmail.com. I'm actually speaking to a few groups coming up who heard about me and this radio show, so I'm looking forward to that. Well, we're talking today about American exceptionalism, and it is just among the most important ideas for Americans to embrace and understand. And, you know, I want to tell you, there are many ways to go on this, but it seems important to start with kind of how America started, and that is in the Declaration of Independence. And, you know, I say this very often, but after the Bible, the Declaration of Independence is the single most important document in world history. And the reason that's true, and there are plenty of ways you can go to research this and speak about it, but the reason that's true is it was the first time in world history that people said the basic idea that you have rights inherent to you simply because you were born. Because you were born, you have these rights. This is what the Declaration of Independence says, very near the beginning. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. That is a profoundly important idea, unique truly in all world history, and it is one of the basic ideas behind America's exceptionalism, that recognition of the right of the individual. It is not a selfish thing. It is a good thing. It is a good thing to recognize it and embrace it. And that's what I want to mention as a kind of a source or core of America's uniqueness and American exceptionalism has to do with the Constitution. And it's interesting, during this era, under the most radical far-left administration America has ever seen in all of world history, in all of American history, more Americans are tuning in again, looking back at the Declaration, back at the Constitution, and asking themselves, you know, can he do that? Can he just change America as he's doing? Can he change policies with executive orders? Can he go around Congress? Well, the answers are in the Constitution. They require enforcement, but they are there. But back to American exceptionalism, two of the basic ideas in the Constitution that contribute to American exceptionalism. One is the idea that we created a document that gives government stability. Because we have three branches in the federal government, not just one king or one dictator or one tyrant, we have three branches, and they are intended to work together and to have balance and to spread power. Legislative, executive, and judicial. The other way the Constitution gives stability to America is that it divides power between the federal government and the state governments. This idea of federalism, hugely important idea. I could talk about that the whole next hour, but I will not, because I want to go on to talking about the other things that gave rise to America's unique exceptionalism, the profound strength America has showed over the centuries since it was founded. And those are the ideas that were enshrined in the Bill of Rights. and the amendments to the first 10 amendments to the Constitution, the Bill of Rights. And we can't go through them all, but the reason America's had stability and the ability to handle problems and talk them through and deal with them and have individuals still have their rights respected is because of things like in the Bill of Rights, like the First Amendment, freedom of religion, free exercise of speech, no law respecting the establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise, the two clauses of the religion language of the First Amendment. We also have a prohibition in the First Amendment. You can't abridge free speech, can't abridge or stop or interfere with free press. The people have a right to peaceably assemble and petition the government. These are massive things, so people are not just repressed, silent, suffering masses. They can speak up. They can practice their lives, their religion the way they want. Also, the other one, we can't go through them all, but the right to bear arms, the Second Amendment, the right against unreasonable searches and seizures, Fourth Amendment, all those things gave a stability to American society, respect for the individual that allowed us to move forward and deal with each other in a way that for most people, most of the time, felt like I kind of got to get fairness out of this. But all that we were just talking about, what the Declaration says, the Constitution says, these are actually structural things that America has. They're like girders in a skyscraper, but they're also additional and equally powerful, important ideas that underlie the creation of America, that undergird America's strength today. And these are things like the concept of limited government, the idea that America's founding ideas came from Judeo-Christian values. They came from the Bible. It came from the Old Testament and the New Testament. This makes us different from countries where the ideas came from the Quran or from Sharia or from countries that came from the idea of the writings of communist leaders and socialist leaders and Marx and Engels and Lenin and all those people. They created different kinds of governments based on their ideas. The ideas behind America were not contrary to what the American left often tries to tell you. They were not founded on, we were not founded on separation of church and state. Were found on values that are found in the Bible and that gave rise to the most free country in the world, including the freedom of religion for anyone who comes here. Also, really, really important undergirding ideas, the rights of the individual, not the group. The idea of self-reliance and opportunity. America is a land of opportunity. It's why my husband's grandfather came here. It's why many people come here to find opportunity. The idea of the nuclear family unit, that is an undergirding American exceptionalism creating idea, a family unit that gives, instead of the government caring for all the children and caring for all the people, families caring. It changes the dynamic of our economy and our culture. The idea of free markets and not collectivism, not socialism. We'll talk about that briefly in the next segment. I have a lot of stories to tell you in the next segment, but I'm going to try to get through these ideas. The other idea is this idea of rule of law. I think for a lot of people, it sounds like, well, I'm not a lawyer and I don't really care about the rule of law. It doesn't matter to me. The rule of law changes everything. The idea that laws are passed by people you elect. If you don't like those laws, you can do something about it. You can choose different people. That everyone in government is supposed to follow those laws. Now, we don't always necessarily comply with that. We had, for example, Congress exempting itself from Obamacare. That was not the rule of law, but the ideas there are supposed to be there. There's also a sense of predictability, limited taxes, regulation. You can understand where society is going to be tomorrow. You're not going to wake up and find everything's changed. Other really important, unique kind of American societal cultural fabric ideas, the idea of just optimism. American people are uniquely optimistic, and it's because of all these ideas. The whole can-do spirit is amazing in America, and not that it's the only place in the world, but it's a prevalent societal characteristic. It's unique in America. Also, for most of our history, lack of class envy. We respected the successful and we wanted to emulate them. Abraham Lincoln spoke about that. Contrary to what the left is trying to do today, which is to create class envy in many, many, many ways, that's not what America is all about. We also just had a sense, and this is a really important idea about why America is unique, a sense of the idea that we're in control of our own destinies, that if we as individuals work hard, are honest in our labors, are responsible in our care for our families, our budgets, our homes, our spending, that we can control our own future. We don't expect radical and bizarre things to happen as long as we are responsible and we do responsible things in conducting our lives. And all of these pieces we've talked about, whether it was the Declaration of Independence, the beauty of the idea of respecting the individual, and the idea of preserving in our foundational documents, the idea of you get to have free speech and free press and freedom of religion. These ideas wove into and made an America that from the world's perspective and from world history, the place that has made America the most prosperous, the most productive, the most creative, the country that produces the most products and new services and new concepts, and the world follows our scientists and our medical leaders and our researchers. They follow, the world looks to us for leadership. And the other way they look to us for leadership is kind of a moral compass leadership. We don't actually, as we were mentioning in the first segment, we don't crush other countries after we have to fight off the Nazis, but we don't take over Germany. We have to fight, we have fought many other wars, but then we come home and we help rebuild those countries and we encourage their prosperity and their growth and their strength. So when we come back after this next upcoming break, I have a bunch of stories that give kind of flavor to these ideas because they are under siege in America. The founding, freedom, liberty-loving ideas are under siege and it's our job to stand up for them. Come back after the break.
866-660-5759 is the number to call with your question or comment. Back to Ladies Can We Talk with Debbie Georgiatos on 660 AM The Answer.
Welcome back. I'm so happy to have you tune in this morning to Ladies Can We Talk. This is Debbie Georgiatos. Today's entire show is dedicated to really thinking about the idea of American exceptionalism. And sometimes, as people on the right are learning more and more, it's easier to share ideas, to talk about things by telling stories rather than simply reviewing points and data and bullet points, but telling stories. So I'm going to start with a story that I just love thinking about. I have a very good friend here. This show is being broadcast from Dallas, Texas. I have a friend here in Dallas who actually grew up in a country where it was a socialist country. In fact, the leader, it was Romania. The leader got elected as quasi saying he was going to be friendly to the West, to Western ideas, and he became socialist. And then the country became communist, a very, very repressive government. And his name is Ceausescu. So my friend who lives here in Dallas now grew up there and was living there as a mom with three children. So she tells a story about when you go to the grocery store in Romania when it was under communist control, and you would bring the bag with you they gave you, and you would say what you needed. And she wanted tomatoes, and they would say, well, how many children do you have? She said three. So they would put three or five tomatoes, whatever it was, into her bag. And she could see one of them was rotten. So she'd say, I don't want that tomato because I don't want that one because it's rotten. And the storekeeper, which was the government, said, you don't get to choose. Out. Next. I mean, you could not even argue about which tomato you had to take. So you had to purchase a rotten tomato. And she says now when she goes into American grocery stores, she said she still sometimes she walks into our stores where the produce is plentiful and shining and clean. And she says, and I can pick any tomato I want. I mean, it's a simple, simple, profound idea. But that idea that she couldn't choose the tomato she wanted living in Romania is really just a great example about the idea of free markets. And, you know, I mentioned in the last segment about the kind of, we have the structural things that bring American exceptionalism. We have the Declaration, the Constitution. We have many, many profoundly important ideas that emerged out of those freedoms. And one is free markets, just the idea that you can choose how you want to live your life. You can choose what you want to do for a job. And free markets create competition. They create more and better services and products. And you think about the motivation in free markets, the motivation of anyone is to, if you want to start a business, is to think about your fellow men and women. What can I grow, build, or do that somebody else wants? And so you might decide, I'm going to, you know, grow prize-winning heirloom tomatoes, and I'm going to charge, you know, $18 a tomato, whatever. You can go for that. Other people can say, you know, I'm going to build the best, most utilitarian pair of sneakers in the world. They'll last forever. I mean, people are motivated to meet other people's needs, and the market shapes those, the results. If you build whatever, you build a new, you know, style of shoe, and people say, I don't like that, I'm not going to buy it. The market tells you that doesn't work. And so then you go back and say, well, I still like to make shoes, so I'm going to make a different one. Free markets are the most loving, meet your neighbor's need kind of idea. And it's important to get that, because the American left and true socialists in this world think that it's better if the government runs everything. That's part of socialism. They will decide. In fact, I have a great story to tell you about that idea. And this is a friend of ours in Dallas who went on a mission trip to Latvia. And that's an Eastern Bloc country. Well, at that time, it was an Eastern Bloc country. It's been freed, but Latvia was under Russian control. And he went to a city in Latvia called Riga. And I don't know what his community service or, you know, mission trip was doing, but he came to realize that in that town, there was a really big factory. And most or many people in the town worked in this factory, and they made shoes in this factory. They made shoes that were rubber. And the guy who ran the factory proudly told him, this friend of ours from Dallas, that everyone in the factory was paid exactly the same amount, from the janitor who cleaned up overnight to the guy or who ran the machines to the guy who ran the whole plant. And so every year these people would churn out all these rubber shoes, and they were very uncomfortable because they were too hot. People didn't like them because they were unpleasant to wear. So once a year, at the end of the year, they would take almost all the shoes that they had manufactured in this town and load them up into a big truck and drive out of town to a large dump and dump the shoes out and burn them, because nobody wanted those shoes. It was a completely, obviously absurd, but it kept the people busy thinking they had a job. They got some horrible low level of pay from the Russian government, so they were kept busy. But the most mind-numbing, uninspiring thing to look at this whole picture, because think, here in America, if someone makes a crummy pair of shoes that nobody will buy, the company goes out of business and they say, ah, better make some better shoes. But that's the whole idea, the beauty of free markets. And so this is part of American exceptionalism, is really rewarding the individual for thinking up and creating products and services and goods that other people want. And as a similar thing, I want to hone in this idea that liberty in America today is under siege. There's a lot of talk in America, a lot of kind of talked down by the American left about the idea of how great free markets are, and maybe socialism isn't such a bad thing. So I wanted to share just a interesting story about a socialist country. This is not 100 years ago. This is right now. In South America, in Venezuela, which is a socialist country, and, you know, working really hard to get as hard and fast socialist as they can, they actually have a shortage of coffins, as in caskets. And the reason they have that shortage is because they cannot come up with the products they need to build new ones: brass, varnish, and satin. Now, you stop and think about that. If in any state or city in America, if you heard, by gosh, there's a coffin shortage, you'd have manufacturers say, hey, man, I'll build those. I got varnished. I can get satin to you tomorrow. You'd have producers scrambling to compete to produce. But this is the American spirit of free markets. That's what it is. And similarly, and it's not to pick on Venezuela, but I just happen to have been reading about them, they have a very serious toilet paper shortage in Venezuela. So now when you go to the store, this is a new story, August of 2014. When you go to the store to buy toilet paper, they take your fingerprints, because people were stockpiling it because they ran out of toilet paper before. And since people don't like to run out of it, they were stockpiling, and the government is having to limit how much you can buy so that everybody gets some. Again, ladies and gentlemen, here in America, can you imagine if we actually had a shortage of any product like that? We would have so many manufacturers, producers scrambling to provide it, shipping it in the next day. And it's not because we have more money. It's not because we're better people. It's because we have a better system. We have free markets. That's what the problem is in Venezuela. One last thing. A whole year ago, May of 2013, Venezuela had a toilet paper shortage then, too, and their National Assembly had backed plans to import 39 million rolls of toilet paper. They had to import toilet paper. I mean, please. I share these because I think sometimes we get duped by leftist thinkers into thinking that there's just nothing different about free markets, that life would be just the same as if we had socialism. And it's a fool's game. It's a fool's lie. We cannot be sucked into this. But part of what we see in America and the American left, this is, by the way, and I'm not going to have a lot of time to talk about today, but Obamacare is a form of socialism. It's a form of government controlling the product or service that doctors would like to make, that medical device manufacturers want to make, that hospitals want to provide this product and service. And we in America letting the government take it over, it is socialism. I want to mention other ideas about American exceptionalism. They're under siege in America, and we can't get through them all. But just one is this idea of religious freedom, hugely important in America. And you know, there's a tension intentionally in the First Amendment between the Free Exercise Clause and the Establishment Clause. But right now in America, we have people who have Christian faith who believe that marriage is between one man and one woman. And other people who don't think that. And beauty of America, you can think anything you want about that. But we have, for example, in America, we have several cases involving people in their own private businesses being prosecuted by the government. We have a Christian bakery in Oregon that is having to pay fines because they declined to provide a wedding cake for a lesbian couple. I mean, fined by the government. We have a Mennonite couple in, I forget what state they're in, but anyway, a Mennonite couple who have a business hosting weddings. And they have a place of business. They host weddings, and they declined to host a same-sex couple marriage, and they are being prosecuted. And we have a New Mexico court saying a Christian photographer cannot refuse a gay marriage ceremony. Ladies and gentlemen, this is not my effort today to talk about same-sex marriage or not. It's the idea in America you're supposed to actually be able to practice your religion. And the American left does not agree with you. They think that they will decide what morality is, what you must do. And that's where we are. We're in this battle in America for holding on to these unbelievably important ideas that gave rise to America's exceptionalism, America's greatness. We have massive, you know, tax levels. I'm hoping to have time last segment to talk about tax levels that cause people. It just represses the idea of our whole free markets and regulations. We also have issues involving free press. We're up against a break. So Debbie Georgiadis, Ladies Can We Talk, come back after the break.
More of Ladies Can We Talk with Debbie Georgiadis. Give her a call at 866-660-5759 right here on 660 AM The Answer.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so very much again for tuning in today. This is Debbie Georgiadis and Ladies Can We Talk. If you'd like to email me afterward or talk about a speaking engagement, it's ladiescanwetalk@gmail.com. And I just am having so much fun talking with you today about American exceptionalism. You know, I tell this story. I told it one time in the air. I'll tell you one other quick time. I used to be a litigator in California, and I did labor and employment litigation. And one time I was in federal court, and very near the end of a long trial, one of my favorite clients, and so my closing argument, going blah, 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 whatever I was saying, and the judge interrupted me and said, "Excuse me, counsel, you're talking so fast, the court reporter can't keep up with you." That is a true story. If I'm talking too fast today, it is because I am extremely passionate about the idea of American exceptionalism and how we cannot let the American left deride, ridicule, and shut down these ideas. Because what we stand for in America, why it became great, why it is still, to use the beacon of hope, the city on a hill that Reagan talked about, is because of all these ideas we're talking about today. And I want to share a few more of them with you. But I want to go back to one thing. I remember I said in the first segment, talk about this great article Charles Murray wrote in the Journal of the American Enterprise Institute about the Europe syndrome. He talked about the idea, that Europe, which everyone loves to go visit, and the cities are lovely, and the history is pretty, and the museums are great, and blah, blah, it's fun to go there. But he talked about the idea that the European model, which is, social essentially socialism. It's democratic socialism. It is guaranteed by the government, you know, higher pay and short working days, and government takes care of your kids, and government takes care of your family, and government does all the kind of stuff. It's fiscally failing. But, it's not sustainable, to use the left's word. It can't go on like this. But really, at the core, the saddest and worst thing about the European model is it can't bring happiness. Use the expression, he says, Charles Murray says, it drains the life out of life. It drains the animation, the joy. You know, Europe is becoming more and more secular also. Fewer and fewer go to church, fewer care about religion. And what the consequence of all this kind of government takes care of you, there's no passion for work. There's no passion for excellence. Productivity is always lower than in America. And outcomes aren't as good. Just everything about America, we are inspired to achieve and succeed because we get a reward for achieving and succeeding. And that's actually another aspect of socialism I wanted to mention beside that. That leads to toilet paper shortages in Venezuela and other shortages of basic common need things that are needed in other countries, is that socialism crushes the human spirit. The idea of if I work hard and I achieve and I keep at it day after day, I can make my own way. I can feel the joy and satisfaction, a deep contentment of self-reliance and self-worth, of caring for my family. This is lost in socialist countries. And he talks about this idea, you know, in Europe, how the number of children they're having is going down and down and down. They've lost the national identity of their country, so they have larger and larger immigrant populations, mainly of Muslim heritage, who are really changing those countries. We need to, in America, no, we're better than that. We are better than letting our precious American heritage go, or let it go lightly. Well, I told you I had stories. I have a whole bunch of them, and I can't even decide which ones to tell you first, but I'll tell you just one quick one. Our family used to live in Washington, D.C., and our kids went to a school that is run by Quakers. It's called the Friends Schools. They're very good schools. And one of the families there, my daughter was friends with a little girl in her class, and that girl's parents had come here from Russia. And so the little girl's grandmother, who still lived in Russia, came over to visit in our area, Washington, D.C. So this grandmother goes to the grocery store with her daughter, who was, you know, my mom peer, goes to the grocery store with her and saw this massive display of fruits and vegetables and said, "Your government gives you better food than our government gives us." And my friend, the mom, said, "No, the government doesn't do this. We have farmers here in Maryland. They grow food. They, like, whatever they do, they process it. It goes to wherever. It comes to stores. And the stores here decide to buy it or not." This grandmother could not process that. She could not process the difference between free markets and how we get things, because to her, everything good, everything you need comes from government. And that sounds like a crazy idea, except stop and think about what's happening in America today in the inner cities, in the poorer communities. And this is not just minority families, every ethnicity and background, people living in long-term dependence on the government, living on government assistance programs of one kind or another. It's that sense of, well, the government gives me life, everything I need. And so that when you need more things, you ask the government for them, versus what used to be that just core American just idea we all loved and knew, this idea about self-reliance, that plucky, hearty sense of Americans, we're going to figure this out, we can do it, we can take care of ourselves, we can make America better. All those ideas that used to be the American spirit. We talked about them all, and we knew them as that. We knew that's what made America great. But we are losing that because of the government providing more and more and more of everything that everyone needs. It's a sad thing. You know, I don't speak of recipients of government assistance as though they are to blame. They are victims of horrible left-wing policies intended. And not just that the outcome is a life of dependence on the government, it's intended to create dependence on the government. It's just like what socialist countries do. They need you to need government. They need you to need it. Democrats today in America live politically, thrive politically by making masses of people dependent on their handouts. And where else will those people go in the voting booth except back to those? And that idea of the growing dependence on government, it's a loss, that hearty, uplifting sense of self-reliance. And it's cruel to the recipients. It's crushing the human spirit to achieve and dream. They're missing out on the most satisfying sense of self-reliance. And America, every one of us, we are all missing out on all the products and goods and services those people might have created had they participated in the American dream. Well, you know, I mentioned a couple other stories I want to share with you. You know, we have a friend, a family friend who works with my husband and some different things. And he grew up in Argentina. And he was talking about the idea that when you walk out the door in Argentina when he was growing up and you saw a police car on the street, your immediate instinct was to run, hide, go back in the house, get away, even though you hadn't done anything wrong. Because the government became somebody, was something that you were suspicious of, you didn't trust, you weren't sure what they were going to do to you. And that idea of having America with a firm, you know, rule of law, orderly process is extremely vital. So if you think you don't really care because President Obama is issuing executive orders and circumventing Congress, you can think, well, I don't really care because I more or less agree with him or because whatever your thinking is. You're really letting that rule of law get crushed. And someday, some other person might be in that White House that you don't agree with, that you do think is even more detrimental to your interests, and you'd like to stop him or her, but you can't. And you know, as I always say on the show, this is the shortest 1 hour of my week. I can hardly stand how fast it goes. I could talk for several more hours, but we're going to be wrapping up on time. So I want to just plant one more seed about this idea of rule of law as part of America's exceptionalism. And that is this idea. If the American people have made clear over and over and over, we don't want something, and the government does it anyway, they pass the law anyway, they change a policy anyway, we're losing not just kind of a sense of rule of law. We're losing the whole battle that the founders started out with, why they had the Revolutionary War, because they said this is, you know, a taxation without representation. The government, they railed against King George for not listening to them. I'll give you two examples. We had Obamacare passed in 2010. At that time, there were literally dozens of polls showing the American people did not want this. There have been dozens of polls since then. The majority of people who voted for President Obama in 2012, who voted for him again, wanted Obamacare repealed. This is an elitism that set in our American government that's saying we don't really care what the people think. We don't care what you want. We're smarter than you. We know better, and we're not going to listen to you. And people, this is going to hurt our precious country in the future. It's going to hurt American exceptionalism. The same thing's happening in immigration. There are just mountains of data out there in the world showing that most Americans recognize amnesty, which is what the Democrats are really talking about. Amnesty is not good for the American worker. There are just in a poll showing that 70% of people said that they feel immigrants threaten Americans' beliefs and customs. 63% of Americans say immigration threatens our economy. And yet you have Obama and the Democrats working as hard as they can. They've now admitted that they know their amnesty goal is so unpopular with American citizens that they're going to try to do it after the election this fall. They're going to wait till after the fall elections and then do it. And you have Republicans trying really hard to help them in the background. So, ladies and gentlemen, if you've tuned into the show today, we talked about American exceptionalism. It's so, so important for each and every one of us to know where it came from, know what it is, speak up for it, and stand up for it. As I say in some of my books, speak up for America.
Thank you for listening to Ladies Can We Talk with Debbie Georgettos. To learn more or to contact us, go to ladiescanwetalk.org and be sure to join us every Sunday at 7 a.m. right here on 660 AM The Answer.